Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach.
Stephanie.
That's Stephanie. I'm Tux. You know the drill.
Do they? They should, in theory,
but we don't know their lives. We be drinking. We be swearing.
We be swearing.
I'm going to actively try to swear more.
I was
going to
say, we be drinking and I, Stephanie, be swearing.
As you hopefully know by now, this is the show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government. Today we are drinking. I don't know why I always say I like draw out the word drinking every time.
Really?
When I listen back, I always say.
So it's your thing.
Yeah.
I've never noticed this.
You know, you always listen to your own voice.
Yeah.
With like a critical eye, a critical ear. Yeah. But so today we are drinking daiquiris.
Not the red ones.
Nope. These are not the daiquiris you think they are.
They're the good ones.
Yeah. As it turns out, a real daiquiri, or at least like an old school daiquiri, a classic daiquiri, is not a frozen cocktail. It is a shaken cocktail that is served up. It's very cold, but it has no ice in it. Daiquiris essentially are just rum, white rum, lime juice, and sugar or simple syrup, shaken with ice and served cold.
Yeah, it's very good. Very
super simple, but super delicious. Yeah.
It's like a rum gimlet.
The original daiquiri was invented in Cuba around the just before the turn of the 20th century. The story goes, this is sort of like when you're getting into stories that are this old about like the recipe for a specific cocktail, you always have to take the story with a grain of salt because it might not be true. But the story goes that it was invented by an American mining engineer named Jennings Cox, who was in Cuba at the time of the Spanish-American War.
Okay.
And he named it after a nearby beach town in Cuba. So there's apparently a town in Cuba called Daiquiri.
I don't know if
that's how it's pronounced, but Daiquiri stayed in Cuba for the first couple decades after they were invented. They were mostly only popular in Cuba. Mm-hmm. Hemingway really liked them, so they started to trickle into the U.S.
Yeah. He was obsessed with Cuba.
Yeah.
I'm
not really... Yeah. I haven't read a lot.
Yeah, there's a Hemingway museum in Havana.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
He was friends with Castro.
Oh, see? Here I am, just being a Philistine over here.
Mm-hmm. I only know this because I illegally went to... went to Castro. I went to Cuba. I went to Cuba in 2014.
I'm so jealous.
I was there when I felt like such a badass when I was planning this because I didn't tell anyone because I didn't want to tell my parents because it's technically illegal to go, but no one fucking cares.
Yeah.
No one really cares. I told them from JFK that I was going.
Oh.
And that there's, yeah, that you weren't going to hear from me for a week because there's no cell phone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
American
yeah.
Towers mm-hmm. for American phones there. But then I found out that President Obama was going to be there at the same time.
Oh.
So everyone's like, oh, you're here for Obama. I'm like, no, I'm here to be a badass.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Obama.
Seriously. Thanks, Obama. Hashtag thanks, Obama.
Ruining your badassery.
I have a story about being assaulted by Cumid police there.
Oh, my.
Because of Obama. Yeah. But moving on.
Yeah. Anyway, so daiquiri stayed in Cuba for several decades. Hemingway liked them, so they kind of started to trickle in, but then they really blew up during World War II because whiskey and vodka in the United States was rationed, and they were hard to find and hard to get.
Yeah.
But because of FDR's good neighbor policy with like South America and Central America, rum was really easy to get. And before World War II, apparently most people considered rum sort of like low class, déclassé.
Oh, wow.
Sailor's drink.
Oh, yeah.
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 Pirates.
Yes.
Booty.
Isn't there something? Booty. Isn't there like a yo-ho-ho and a bottle of rum?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sort of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So people weren't into rum really until the 40s during World War II when whiskey was rationed.
Okay.
After the war, because so many soldiers were stationed in the South Pacific, America's really fell in love with like tropical stuff.
Oh.
But it really wasn't until World War II that people were like, ooh, tropical vacations, tropical cocktails, rum and fruity citrus and blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I had no idea until I started researching this.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's so many fruity like island drinks that were.
Yeah. Like, tiki culture blew up in the 50s.
Yeah.
So this isn't really a tiki drink because that's.
Yeah, no.
But they were still sort of on the same menus as tiki
it's
cocktails.
It's similar. It's like adjacent.
A lot of tiki drinks are not, they're like American inventions. They're not actually, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get into a tiki cocktail one of these days.
We did the Blue Hawaiian, which I think is kind of a tiki cocktail, right?
Yeah, I guess it was, but we didn't really talk about the history of like tiki. So yeah, they basically blew up starting in the 40s. They were really popular in the 50s and 60s, just as they are, as classic rum, lime, sugar, shaken.
Simple,
before they
easy,
got
delicious.
Frozen. Yeah. And with strawberries and shit added. It's also said that daiquiris were JFK's favorite drink.
It's a good drink.
Yeah. He's reported to have celebrated with a daiquiri the night he won the election.
Oh.
And it's also said that Jackie Kennedy trained the White House staff to make daiquiris just how they liked them.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe like not too sweet.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Not too...
I actually played with the ratio. If you look up like classic daiquiri recipe, every single recipe you look at has different ratios of rum to sugar to lime.
It's all about taste.
Yeah.
How interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Let's cheers.
Let's.
Ta-da!
We did it.
When I was a kid at school learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, if you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
So that's it. We're drinking a Cuban drink that was popular in the U.S. in like the 50s and 60s.
This is perfect because I am talking about Cuba and JFK. Going back. My scandal this episode is Operation Northwoods.
Operation Northwoods.
Do you know about Operation Northwoods?
No idea.
Yes.
When I lived in the Adirondacks, it was the region that I lived in was often called the Northwoods. I worked at a hotel called the Northwoods Inn.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep.
How fascinating. Okay. It is, to me, by a wide margin, the most sinister plot that's ever come out of the JFK administration. Mm. It's that time when we undeniably planned to trick the American public into supporting a war with Cuba.
Tricked the American public. Wow.
Yes. Just lies. So
imagine that.
Imagine that, right? So instead of the CIA's varsity team for crackpot ideas, we have the Defense Department's version.
Mm.
It is fucked up.
Okay.
It is fucked up because it's military might plus terrible ideas. What could possibly go wrong, right?
Where nothing could possibly go wrong.
So Operation Mongoose is still, to this day, one of the most outrageous, ambitious, flat-out crazy plans that's ever come out of the intelligence agency in this time. But Operation Northwoods is so much worse. Like, so much worse. Because all of the zaniness from Operation Mongoose has been replaced with bombs. So it's not, like, fun and, like, silly and stupid. It's like, oh, let's just kill people.
But in the zany way.
No, the zaniness is gone.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. So, okay, if you're listening and you're like, what is Operation Mongoose?
Oh, yeah.
You're outing yourself as someone who's not listened to episode 14. So hit pause and listen to all the fun sort of details. It's not technically necessary to listen to it, but I give a lot of background in that episode.
Yeah, this is going to be another one where it's like, it's a different subject, but it's related.
It's
and
related,
there's background
and it's happening at the same time. I'll give you all the information that you need to know this time around, but you should listen to it.
Yeah.
You should listen to it.
It's the second story in the full episode prior to this
one. Episode 14. Yeah. Go there. Listen to it. It's really good. So the goal of Operation Mongoose was to replace Castro's communist sympathizing government with an administration that's more favorable to American interests.
Surprise.
Yeah, right? Oh, and they did this through, like, harebrained covert ops. I mean, they're schemes.
Yeah.
They should be called schemes. They're not covert ops. It was ridiculous. They do this through these schemes and through terrorism on Cuban soil. And that last part is really important. They're doing this over there. They're not doing that shit here. Castro hasn't caused us to lose our fucking minds, thankfully. So the year is 1962. This is peak Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
Hashtag peak Cold War. On one side, we have the U.S. and their allies. On the other side, we have the Soviet Union and their growing list of allies. the countries that are signing the Warsaw Pact.
I feel like we need to do an actual Cold War episode, because this is the second Cold War adjacent episode of the season.
Yeah, I hope we can, because I have another scandal that I'm thinking about doing that is like related to the Cold War.
Well, if any of you guys out there listening know of something that is like sort of short and sweet and to the point, but also epitomizes what the Cold War really was at its core, please let us know and maybe we'll do that.
So again, this is peak Cold War. The dictator that we propped up in Cuba is gone. Batista, we missed you. We don't miss you. Lies. Cuba is flirting with communism.
Ooh, yeah, that sounds like adorable.
Dancing up next to communism, maybe a little shimmy.
Just pouty lips.
Yes. Maybe there's like a red dress involved. Yes. And
a red scarf over a lamp.
Oh, what?
That's not flirting. That is full on red light district. Tim.
It's all right. Yeah.
You know what to do.
Cuba is, you know, shimmying, maybe salsaing up to the Soviet Union. Like, hey, girl, how you doing? How do you feel about private ownership?
Oh, talk dirty to me.
Know, right? So this is intolerable.
Yeah.
Cuba is way too close to be like playing these games, like way too close to us geographically for them not to bow down and kiss the rings like Puerto Rico.
Yeah. The similarities between Cuba and Puerto Rico, then they're fast so forward similar. All these years later and look at like where Puerto Rico is now, because they did what we asked them to do.
Exactly. Puerto Rico's filled with scandal.
Yeah.
There could be a whole podcast about Puerto Rico and the scandals there. So the fear was so great back then at the mere possibility of opening up military bases on Cuban soil, like Soviet military bases, less than 100 miles away from Florida. This was too much.
Well, then if that was what you were afraid of, why be a dick? You know what I mean? Like, why not try and be nice to fucking Cuba?
That's not the way.
That's true.
That's not the way. It was like an insatiable hunger for them to destroy Castro. Like, it's like they thought about him all night and like all day. Like they were obsessed. They were obsessed. I think the main reason is legitimate. Like the fear of having Soviet bases on Cuban soil, Soviet warheads, nuclearized, like pointed at the U.S. Like that's a legit fear.
Yeah.
Especially because we had the same in Turkey pointed at them, the Soviets.
Oh my God.
So it's the fear of an even playing field, really.
Exactly. That's exactly what that's I was going to say.
Unfortunately.
If we're already doing it.
We're like, already had been doing it. Yeah. But it would be upping the ante because it's like now we're equal. So
what
are we
going to
do?
Because that's what the Cold War was.
Yes.
Was constant anteing, upying.
Yeah. It's just like two big swinging dicks.
Those were not words. It just came out of my mouth.
It's all right. No, I know what you meant. It's true. It's like they were one-upping each other at every turn. Yeah, that was one reason. And the other was just the fear of looking weak on the international stage, unfortunately, because we were just coming off the heels of this horrible flop, the Bay of Pigs. We haven't talked about it on the podcast, but it's a crazy scandal. It sparked so much.
Yeah.
Like, if the Bay of Pigs was successful, like, wow.
But that was also...
History would be so different. So there is this fear of looking weak on the international stage because, you know, we are a few decades after dropping two and a half bombs on Japan. We're this young nation, like hyper militarized, yet we're being bested by Cuba.
Yeah.
Like, what? Like, somehow Cuba has snatched our wig? Like, we're just like no edges, like looking crazy. Like, we've seen better days and we're feeling a little insecure.
Yeah.
A lot of insecure, perhaps. Operation Mongoose pulled together various arms of the U.S. intelligence services in a bid to find ways to either replace Castro, to kill him, or to hurt his feelings, I guess, you know?
It's such a crazy story.
So this is the CIA. So, like, while the CIA planners are, like, working really furiously to crank out, like, ludicrous ideas, like, the worst ideas you've ever heard in your life... The Joint Chiefs of Staff. Do you know what the Joint Chiefs of Staff are?
I have heard that phrase so many times and don't actually know what it
means. Yeah, so they're the supreme commanders of the various branches of the U.S. Armed Forces. So it's like the head of the Navy, the head of the Air Force, the head of the, you know, the other thing. It's,
that makes
exactly
a lot of sense,
just
but like...
I don't know what the other two are.
Navy,
Air Force.
Army.
Army! Look at you over here. Army. There's four.
Like what is the... God damn.
I should have looked this up. Okay, yes. So It's the head of the Air Force, Coast Guard, U.S. Army, U.S. Navy, and the Marines. These are the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So while the CIA is doing their, like, weird, crazy, like, schemes, the Joint Chiefs, they're coming up with more straightforward ideas.
Okay.
So they just want to do a military strike, because why fuck around with poison wetsuits when we have bombs?
Yeah.
You know? Like, why are we doing this? Why are we playing these childish games?
Also, why are we dropping bombs on innocent people? But I mean, that's besides the point.
Thank you. That is besides the point, Tux.
Yes. How dare I?
Thank you. Thank you for saying that to yourself. Thank you for hearing the words in my head. So Operation Northwood was a very, 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 very desperate proposal to overthrow the Cuban government by staging false flag operations on American soil with Americans, just to have a reason to run up on Castro, like empty your pockets. Yeah. False flags.
I mean, I'm not shocked by any of this. Yeah. I should be, but I'm
not. So do you know what a false flag is?
In theory, yeah. It's like a, it's a distraction. It's like a, yes. Yeah.
Do you know where the term like
no.
comes from? Okay. So it comes from the 1600s, like the 16 to 1700s pirates. Like it was a thing that pirates did. Like they would fly a false flag as a way to sneak up on their enemies.
So, like, if you're trying to attack the Spanish, you would fly a Spanish
flag.
Correct,
correct. Wow. And then at the last minute, you'd switch it to the pirate flag, and they wouldn't have enough time to flee. Or, like, hold on to their butts. You'd
be like, surprise, I'm a pirate, I'm not Spanish.
Fuck yeah. That's awesome. And then, like, it's the name stuck around because sometimes they wouldn't switch it to a pirate's flag. Like, the Spanish flag would remain. It would be a false flag.
Sure.
The wrong party or the wrong country would be blamed for like a pirate attack.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Okay. So today this term is used when governments or their actors or even organizations carry out a terror attack and then blame it on their enemies for political purposes.
Nobody ever does that though.
I thought you were serious for a moment. I'm just like, do you not know world history?
Have you not been listening to this podcast?
We need to pause and I need to teach Tux world history. So it's really, really shady, this maneuver, staging false flag events, but they work. They work like a charm. Like they almost always work.
Yeah.
It's only decades later that people figure out that like,
wow.
Wait a second. Huh. So it's not super hard to dupe the public into blindly like supporting X or demonizing Y, like at all.
Shocking.
Yeah, I know. So they say that to a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. And the U.S. military is very much a hammer, because duh. And Cuba and Castro, they're looking like a very troublesome nail.
Meanwhile, they're like a bolt or something.
Yeah, I mean, they're nothing.
Yeah.
They're literally nothing compared to the U.S. Yeah. Military. Come on. So the Joint Chiefs, they just wanted to have a military strike. As I said, they just want to go over there, drop a bomb, like easy.
Yeah.
Problem solve. Like he's gone. And a lot of people are gone, but he's gone. And they realized like they would need to find a reason. Like they couldn't just do that. They needed to have public support. They were kind of politely reminded, like, no, we can't just do this really aggressive act out of nowhere, drop a bomb on Cuba, because it would have been disastrous politically.
Yeah. But rather than saying this is not an option, their solution was let's make it an option.
Exactly.
Let's make
people
think.
So they would need a reason to go and destroy this tiny little island that's just minding its own business.
Yeah, okay.
So under the codename Operation Northwoods, a series of false flag events to justify the invasion of Cuba were drawn up. The Joint Chiefs, they developed a series of plans. The document is only about 15 pages, but a lot of it is kind of repetitive. I pulled out like 8 plans that were kind of meaty. They're putting together these hostile operations against its own military, its own civilians.
So this is the American government doing domestic terrorism against Americans.
Correct.
And American military.
Correct. Yes.
Holy fucking shit.
Yes. Against its own civilians, its own military, as well as those of neighboring nations and Cuban refugees, while making it look like all of these attacks were coming from Cuba.
I'm gooped.
This is how bad they wanted Castro.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like insane. It's literally insane. They wanted to achieve the goal of a Cuban invasion. So they made the following proposals, all to be carried out by secret American agents. So proposal number one was an attack on Guantanamo Bay. We're just going to attack our own naval base.
Sure.
Yeah, so it would start with rumors, and then somehow Cuban friendlies, somehow, they would be dropped into the base, like over the fence. They would just somehow roll up on the base, undetected, but get over the walls and into it.
Okay.
And they would be captured by operatives, let's say, waiting for them.
Yeah.
Let's say that we're waiting for them.
Sure.
And this would set off riots, and like they wouldn't capture all of the friendlies that were like thrown over the wall. Like some would be running around setting shit on fire. There was a plan that called for detonating all of the ammunition on the base. And when I read that, I'm like, all of the ammunition on a naval base, all of it? You want everyone to die? Okay. There would be fire, there'd be mortar shells coming in from outside the base, into the base, like just chaos, general chaos. But it would all culminate, like after ships are on fire and there's riots and like Cubans have been captured, it would all culminate with an event that was supposed to be reminiscent of the USS Maine. The USS Maine was an incident that happened in Havana's harbor where this was in 1898. This battleship, the USS Maine, it was kind of old, a little rickety. It sunk one day. There was an explosion and it sunk. And we thought Spain had attacked us. And there was this rallying cry, remember the Maine, to hell with Spain. That's how we got into the Spanish-American War. That's how we got Guam. That's how we got Puerto Rico. That's how we got Cuba for a hot minute. So it was, they wanted these operatives, these Cuban commandos, air quotes, to set a naval ship on fire in Guantanamo Bay and sink it. So throughout the planning documents, I saw this over and over again. I saw this at least 7 times. In parentheses, they would have real or simulated ? So the Navy ship could be real, i.e. with real sailors on board, or it could just be a drone ship that's empty that they remote detonate.
Are there casualties, like American citizens died because of this?
No, these are just plans. These are just the plans.
Oh.
Yes. No, this did not happen, you guys.
Okay.
Because you would have known if it happened.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say, like, how have I not heard about this?
No.
Okay.
These are plans. They wanted this to happen.
Okay.
So, yeah, the real or simulated. I'm just like, always simulated.
So why do we have to kill people? So the Joint Chiefs of Staff came up with all these ideas.
Correct. Okay. This is their, like, version of Mongoose. Operation Northwoods is their plan to get rid of Castro.
Okay. Did any of them ever happen? Okay.
None of them happened. Like, everything was declassified. None of them happened.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
So the real or simulated thing is really bothersome to me, because it's like, if you could do it simulated. Why do you need to kill people?
Yeah.
So if they had gone the simulated route, the final step would be staging mock funerals. And this is in their planning document.
Jesus.
Yes, they were willing to go that far. Mock funerals.
Holy
yes,
shit.
They were going to create soldiers who died in this event and stage their funerals. So now, like, in researching this scandal, I now realize why people think, I mean, it's so fucked up, think that, like, Sandy Hook was a false flag. Like, that they're, like, it's because of Operation Northwoods, because this was declassified and this was something that the military drew up to do.
Mm-hmm.
Their whole planning documents was to have, like, family at the funeral, like, actors.
But this also would have been before the internet, so nobody would have been able to trace that family.
Absolutely. That is true. Yeah. That's the first proposal, to attack our own Navy base in Guantanamo. The second proposal was to foster homegrown terrorists that would commit terrorist acts in Miami, in D.C., and also in, quote, other cities. So coming near you, terrorist attacks. Jeez. Mass shootings in public places, and the placing of plastic explosives in public places to detonate. Like, a mall.
My
boom.
Fucking jaw is on the floor. I can't even.
Yeah. A school. Boom. Cuba did it.
This is like Orwellian.
It is incredible, because it's so unbelievable. The documents are, it's cold-blooded. It really is. It's so disturbing.
And the heads of the military were like, we should do this.
Yep. So I think this plan, it's when they were like, okay, maybe we shouldn't kill American citizens. Maybe we've gone too far. Let's back it up a bit. Maybe. Let's think about it. So their third proposal was, instead of killing Americans in terrorist attacks, they were going to kill Cuban refugees in terrorist attacks. They were going to target them for assassinations and bombs. Like, they'd place bombs in their car, bombs at their homes, blow up their families. And we'd blame it on Castro, saying that he has found these Cubans who left the country because they wanted to, you know, they wanted to be free. They didn't want to be under that regime. And they're living peacefully in the U.S., and now they're being targeted.
I can barely form a word with my jaw this far from my...
Yeah, so I really think they thought that murdering Americans in cold blood was too much, but they're like, let's murder Cubans living here, living their lives.
That's the history of our country, right? It's okay to kill somebody else's citizens.
To go back to the second proposal of the terrorist attacks on Americans, on American soil, in places like Miami and D.C., they said the terrorist would be a Cuban refugee.
Okay.
That was here.
Yeah.
So in a way, they were putting a target on the backs of Cubans living here peacefully.
Sure.
Because now their neighbors are looking at them like, are you one of them? Mm-hmm. Like, have you been radicalized?
Which is what we just went through in World War II with German citizens living in the United States, with Japanese citizens living in the United States.
Oh, yeah. Tales old as time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So the third plan was to kill refugees living here peacefully, minding their own business. And also there was a plan, it's kind of like a sub plan. It was in quotation, like question marks. There's a possibility of sinking ships coming here with Cuban refugees, like Cuban friendlies who are seeking asylum, to sink their ships before they get here and blame it on Cuba.
This is crazy.
Yeah. And it's a way to just make Cuba look like this crazy country that won't let its own people live. Like, if Cuba's going to do this to their own blood, what will they do to us, sort of thing. The fourth proposal was to fake support for revolutions happening in Central America, like the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. They kind of knew, because they were spying on Cuba since the late 50s, that Cuba was secretly encouraging revolutions, like guerrilla movements in other places. Mm-hmm. They were like encouraging them to like shake off their colonial masters, like in Haiti, in the Dominican Republic, in Guatemala and Nicaragua.
How dare they?
So there was a plan that the U.S. was going to support these revolutionaries, in fake support them. They were going to pretend to be Cuba. They were going to send them messages like, hey, you guys want some weapons? Like, we got weapons.
Huh.
Supposedly coming from Cuba to the communist underground in these other cities.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. There was also a plan to fake a Cuban aircraft that would fly into DR and, like, blow up some cane fields, some, like, sugar cane fields, as a way to, like, you know, strike it to the man over there.
Sure.
All of these attacks would be supplemented by, like, fake messages from Cuba, air quotes, from Cuba to the communist undergrounds in these places. And they would have these shipments of weapons, but they would always be intercepted at the beach. Because they're really not trying to give Nicaragua weapons.
Sure, obviously. Yeah,
so, like, the U.S. would just conveniently be in the neighborhood, be like, oh, I see something.
Look what I caught you
terrible
doing.
Terrible happening. But, like, the reason that we would be encouraging these, like, uprisings was so we could expose them.
Sure, yeah.
So
yeah,
we
yeah.
could show the international community that, hey, Cuba's trying to spread communism all over the place. Like, he's a threat to peace.
Mm-hmm.
But thankfully, we were here to stop this weapons shipment from happening.
It's so childish.
It really is, right?
It's a lot less fucked up than killing American citizens, or even killing Cuban citizens.
Yeah.
But it's so ridiculous and so...
Yeah.
Juvenile.
It's so layered, and it is childish. It really is. It's so, So the fifth proposal was to harass civilian planes and shipping vessels. Cuba had a military aircraft that was called an MIG.
Okay.
They bought it from the Soviets, and it seems like they exclusively used it. So they would somehow dummy up a copy of a Cuban MIG plane, and they would use it to harass civilian planes. Like, flying really close to them, or there was a plan to blow up shipping vessels that were just, like, on the ground as a way to show that Cuba is threatening and harassing, and they're a threat to business because they're blowing up all this, you know, all these goods, these shipping containers.
Wow.
But meanwhile, it would be a copy of a Cuban MIG piloted by American operatives.
It's just, like, a regular American plane that just says Cuba.
Basically,
Cuba did it.
Oh, man, yeah. So I have, there's just two more. The seventh proposal was a plan to shoot down a military plane. They wanted to shoot down a plane 15 to 20 miles off the coast of Cuba. So they would have a fighter jet that would radio a distress call, and then it would say that it's, I see a Cuban MIG, like there's two Cuban MIGs like on my back, like they're about to hit me. Mayday, mayday. And then this jet, this American jet, would dip under radar and go back to Eglin Air Force Base, which is the closest base to Cuba. It's in western Florida.
Okay.
There, the jet would change its tail number, like repaint it. And the pilot, who was flying under an alias, would just rejoin his squadron. And the cherry on top would be that there would be a submarine off the coast of Cuba that would throw out like charred jet parts and then parachute to really sell the fact that a plane has been exploded, like that Cuba shot down a plane off their coast.
Wow.
So this would be showing like an escalation, like they're targeting our military. So clearly Cuba want to fight. It's so deceitful. It's
not only deceitful, but it's also like thinking about every other military, whatever, skirmish with every other country that we've ever dealt with since.
Yeah.
Like, we could be doing things like this.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking as I learned about all of this. I'm like, oh, this is what we're willing to do.
This is probably what we are doing, and we just don't know about it because it's not declassified.
I'm making that emoji face with all the teeth right now. I mean, we don't know. We don't know that this is happening, but this is a possibility because it's been drafted before.
Yeah.
And it's all about if a president will sign off on it or not. The final proposal, proposal number 8, was a plan to shoot down a commercial plane. Correct, yes. They'd be staging shooting down a chartered civilian airliner en route to South America. But the plane would be a repainted Air Force plane. This one is especially devious. The plan involved both a drone aircraft and just this regular repainted plane to look like a charter plane. They would all take off from different bases in Florida, and they would meet at a rendezvous point, like, off the coast of Florida. The chartered plane would, again, dip under radar and go back to Eglin Air Force Base in Florida and unload the passengers. And the passengers, it's kind of unclear who these passengers would be, if it would really be. They were planning to tell the media, after it was shot down, that it was a group of college students on their way to South America on a school trip. Yes, on a school trip. Young lives lost by, this is what Cuba does, you guys. So this plane would dip below radar and unload the passengers. Maybe they would get on, maybe they'd say that, like, there's something wrong with this plane. We need to put you on a new plane. And they'd be on their way to South America, not even knowing.
Okay.
So they would.
I was going to say, if you tried to do this with college kids,
yeah,
it would be like, they would be like, hey, yeah, ABC no. News, guess yeah. what just happened?
They wouldn't even know because, again, It involves two planes. One is a drone plane. One is a real plane.
Okay.
So the drone plane would continue to fly on the flight path, like filed with civilian aviation.
Sure.
So it would look like nothing happened because the one dipped below radar and went back to the base. So the drone would continue flying the flight path, and off the coast of Cuba, it would register a mayday, like a pre-recorded message would say, hey, you know, there's Cuban MIGs, like, you know, they're firing at us. Mayday, mayday, mayday. Boom.
Good Lord.
Yeah. So radio stations around the Western Hemisphere would pick up this mayday because, again, it's international waters. It's off the coast of Cuba. So rather than the U.S. trying to convince people what happened, these radio stations all over the world would be like, hey, I think one of your planes were shot down.
Oh, my God.
And we'd be like, wait, what? Oh, wow. There was a plane full of college students at the prime of their life.
Oh my God. Yes. This is insane. Oh my God.
Insane. So this is the end. So the joint chiefs, they, you know, they put together, they were so happy about their proposal. They put it together. They took it straight to JFK and he read through the briefing. And what do you think he did?
Well,
he immediately denied it.
Yeah.
He was just like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Are you guys fucking serious? Get out of my office.
There was a couple of them that I'm like, we might have been able to do that.
Yeah. He looked at them as a whole and said, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was appalled. Actually surprised. Any of the ones that didn't actually include civilian death.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised that we didn't actually do.
Yeah. But he was just appalled at the lengths that they were willing to go to justify...
As he should have been.
Invading Cuba. Yeah, as he should have been.
Thank the fucking Lord that he had some... Yeah. A conscience.
He would go on to fire the chairman of the Joint Chiefs.
Good.
His name's like Lyman Lemitzer. He would be fired because they're just like... I just have a feeling that JFK would just see him in the halls and be like, this fucking guy.
You're a piece of shit.
This fucking guy.
Yeah.
I can't believe what he put on my desk.
Like, literally, you're a scumbag. Like,
you fucking asshole. But the Joint Chiefs, they looked at him like he was weak. And they said that he was being soft on Cuba. And it really created a rift within the Department of Defense. They're just like, he's not strong enough. He's not the strong leader that we need. And I think JFK is like, I'm not a psychopath. Like... Call me weak, I'm not a psychopath.
That's not the weak. End.
Yeah, no, it isn't.
That's strong. That's strength, he was strong enough to stand up to the fucking military and be
we're
like,
not
you
doing
guys
this,
are
and
crazy.
Also you're fucking fired. Get out of my face. You have no job.
Holy shit. Wow, yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Thank the Lord.
Thank
that
the Lord,
he
praise him.
Didn't,
capital H.
Like, because you kind of prefaced when you did Operation Mongoose, you were talking about like what a hard-on he had for Castro.
Huge hard on, but he wasn't willing to go to these lengths.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah, he was fine with just like, you know, the 2 cent bounty, like the little just fucking with Castro in that way, but not this.
Because these are two very different things.
Very different.
Yeah.
Very different. Yeah. I was thinking about including this in Mongoose, and I'm like, no, this is its own thing.
Totally different.
And it's dark. The levels
so
that they were
dark.
Willing to go to get, just to get one man, all these lives lost. You're going to shoot people in Miami? Just to blame it on Castro?
Well, sneak preview.
Oh.
My next story is also about the lengths people are willing to go to get one man.
Crazy.
On that note.
Yeah.
Our cocktails are... Yes. Well, mine is empty. Stephanie's been flapping her jaw much to drink.
I have been. my jaws are very dry for flapping.
That's how we do. Ooh, and we're back with fresh cocktails.
We're back, yes. We get to finally relax and drink and have a good time. No responsibilities.
Now it's my turn to flap my gums.
Yeah.
I
can let my gut out.
Oh, can I let my gut out?
No, suck it in.
Damn it.
Be a professional.
Okay, so the holidays are coming up.
Yes.
It's about to be a new year.
Ooh, yes.
So, I have a question for you. Is there anything that you're hoping you're going to get for Christmas this year? You grew up celebrating Christmas and stuff, right?
Yeah, we celebrate Christmas on MLK.
Oh.
Yeah, because I like to think that it's because we're like militant black people, but we're, the flights are just cheaper and we have a big family.
That makes sense, yeah.
We started this when I was in college, like years ago. Like, I mean...
But when you were a kid... You celebrated on Christmas. Yeah.
On Christmas, yes, definitely. But now it's like we celebrate in January.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I never even... Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I come back from work.
Stuff, you can get better sales and stuff.
Way better sales, yeah. So we do a Secret Santa. We pull names during Thanksgiving, so I only have to buy one gift, which is great.
That's amazing.
But every year it gets more and more spectacular. Like one year my dad bought like one of my sisters a flat screen... And it was like a 60-something. It's ridiculous.
No, you need a.
We need a cap.
A cap. Yeah, yeah.
We need
yeah.
a cap.
That's
because
what we're doing,
doing
now
too much.
Too.
And by we, I mean my dad is doing too much.
Yeah, really, it's just me, my mom, and Russell.
Yeah,
just the three of us. And what we've been doing is we'll pool our money for Christmas and buy a vacation.
So like last year we went to Spain. Idea.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a great family tradition. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. That's really great.
But this year.
Oh.
Okay. All I want for Christmas...
Your two front teeth?
Impeachment.
Oh, yes.
So today I'm going to be talking about impeachment.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to be telling the story of a president who traveled the country fanning the flames of racism and division and hatred.
But he's not the one I'm thinking of.
A president who viewed Congress and his opponents with open and vocal disdain... A president who was obstinate and stubborn and combative and hostile when the country really needed unity and leadership.
Presidents aren't like that.
A president who worked really hard to undo the achievements of his predecessor using executive power.
This. Oh, no.
A president who did more damage than good and will likely go down in history as one of our worst ever.
Yes.
Do you have any guesses to who I might be talking about?
Johnson,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is President Andrew Johnson.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know nothing about him other than that he was impeached and he was a scumbag.
Yes, he is a scumbag. Yeah.
Good people aren't impeached.
Yeah. I was hoping that you might not know enough about him to be like,
I don't know anything about him.
Yeah.
I really, like, all of those things, it sounded like Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, because it is.
It is.
All those things are the same.
So, yeah. Anyways, today I'm going to be talking about the impeachment of President Andrew Johnson. Johnson was Abraham Lincoln's second vice president. And after Lincoln was shot, he became America's 17th president. He was also the first president to ever be impeached.
Yes. That's all I know about him.
Yeah. So for his first term in office, Lincoln had chosen fellow Republican Hannibal Hamlin as his running mate, as his VP. But then when he came up for a second term in 1864, he... Like, Hannibal Hamlin was a good politician. He was in good health. He was willing to run again. But Lincoln was really worried that he, because of the war was so strenuous and, like, so much. Mm-hmm. He was really worried that he might lose the election. So he thought he had to, like, change things up to try and drum up support. So he decided to choose a Southern Democrat instead of a fellow Republican, thinking that it would sort of like be like this good faith measure of like showing that he would be willing to work with people across the aisle.
Yes. Half measure.
There were two problems with this plan. The first is he didn't know that he was going to be assassinated and that he would have to pass the torch to this Southern Democrat. The other problem was the reasons that Johnson was loyal to the Union and anti-slavery were very different from Lincoln's reasons.
Okay.
So Lincoln wanted like justice and rights for black Americans. Yeah. Well, also within limits because
it's like
the 1860s.
Yeah, you got to do what you, it's the Declaration of Independence is a lie.
Yeah.
The first sentence
is
literally a lie. Yeah. But we're trying every, I guess, administration to make it more true.
Not Johnson's administration.
Yeah. Can't win them all.
Yeah. But so Lincoln was trying to give black Americans voting rights, was trying to promote economic integration.
Okay.
You know, he was trying.
Yeah.
He never really laid out an actual plan for Reconstruction, though, because, I mean, we were at war.
Clearly. Yeah.
No, seriously. But we were at war. Things were really chaotic.
Yes.
And he just felt like he needed to roll with the punches before, you know, he couldn't put anything down on paper because who knew
what
was going to happen, next week, let alone next year.
Yeah.
But ultimately, he was anti-slavery on a moral basis.
Mm-hmm.
Johnson's reasons for being anti-slavery were really fucking gross.
Oh.
So Johnson had grown up poor in North Carolina and Tennessee. He was born in North Carolina, but moved to Tennessee when he was young. And he had this idea that if white people were not allowed to own slaves, that they would give those jobs to poor white people instead. And so his idea for Reconstruction was that Reconstruction should specifically be about building economic and political power for poor white Southerners.
Okay.
He was also had this really...
Which is what happened.
But, well, so he also really wanted to focus on taking power away from the sort of, like, planter class elites and the, like, plantation aristocracy that sort of led us up to the Civil War in the first place, which didn't really happen. Not in the way that he wanted it to.
Yeah.
But ultimately, he didn't give a single fuck about what would happen to former slaves after they were freed.
He's a Southern Democrat.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, they're not, it's not in his purview at all.
Yeah. He basically thought that black people were unable to manage their own lives, whether he thought they were too lazy or too stupid or too, just basically incapable.
Managing their own lives.
Managing their own lives in like a civilized society. Basically like Andrew Jackson felt with Native Americans. You know what I mean?
Even though they're... Yeah.
In fact, in 1866, he told a group of Black Americans who were visiting the White House, told them while they were on a tour of the White House that they should immigrate, that they should leave the country because they didn't belong here.
But it's like you brought us here.
I know.
Why would we leave?
Yeah.
This is our place. We built it.
Yeah. We built this house that you're living in.
Yeah, we're not going anywhere.
Yeah. He was also, at another time, not at this moment, but he was reported to have said, "This is a country for white men, and as long as I am president, it shall be a government for white men."
It is.
Yeah. To this day. Yes.
I'm like... facts.
Yeah. Show me the lie.
I'm searching for it. Yeah.
So he basically believed, or not basically, he literally believed that Black lives didn't matter.
Yes.
He thought that Black American suffrage was not only a waste of time, but also a distraction from what the real goal should be, which was making America great again for white people.
Yes. Oh, wow. Same.
Yeah. In the beginning, right after Lincoln was shot, people were really optimistic for a Johnson presidency. He hadn't really been able to show his colors. Lincoln was in office for such a short time before, in his second term, before he was assassinated, that people didn't really know who Johnson was.
How long was he?
I don't know exactly. Okay. I think it was like months.
Months. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a short time. Maybe a year tops.
Okay.
I'm probably lying. It wasn't even like half of his term, anyways.
Okay, fair.
But so people thought, you know, he was Lincoln's running mate. Yeah, people liked Lincoln. Quiet. There was all this goodwill.
Lincoln picked him. He should be good.
Yeah. Even the like super progressive radical Republicans in Congress were really optimistic about having Johnson as president. They, you know, Senator Ben Wade of, do you want to guess where he might be from?
Ohio.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yes.
So.
Oh, no.
No, but he was a progressive. He was a radical Republican. He said, "By the gods, there will be no trouble now in running this government."
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Because basically Johnson said he was going to follow Lincoln's plan for Reconstruction. He said that, but then he did not. And also there was no plan. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nothing was written down. So unfortunately, Johnson was not half the statesman that Lincoln was.
Shocking.
And things went south fast. He was combative, as I said. He was hostile. He was also kind of weirdly like passive aggressive in a really weird way. I'll get into that in a little bit. But like, he also had these really fucked up views on what Reconstruction should be focusing on. And once they started to come out, people were like, dude, what the fuck is up with this guy?
Yeah.
Within weeks, he openly opposed rights for freedmen. He put forth this lenient Reconstruction policy plan, and he said that he wanted to pardon Confederate leaders.
Of course.
Like, completely pardon them. You're good. Go ahead.
You're fine.
Meanwhile, like, Northerners weren't exactly vindictive about the South, but they wanted to make sure that, like, the war hadn't been fought for nothing. They wanted to make sure that there was sort of swift action taken to make sure that the rebels didn't try to, like, regroup and
start
come back.
Shit again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So they wanted something to be done, but Johnson was kind of like, we don't need to do nothing. It's fine.
Oh,
yeah. Yes. So Johnson basically,
he's like, I gave them a talking to, and they know.
Yeah, they know what they did.
They're good.
Yeah. He ignored popular opinion. He pushed to rapidly restore Southern states to the Union with little in the way of consequences or demands.
Where was he from again?
Born in North Carolina, but he grew up in Tennessee. Yeah.
Okay. But he's like a representative from Tennessee at this point? He's not just some dude.
No. He was a Democrat in Tennessee, but then he must have moved to D.C. during the war.
Oh, okay.
Because he was pro-Union.
Okay.
So he like left the South, came to the North, anti-Confederacy, but like because he basically just thought the Confederates shouldn't be allowed to keep exploiting the poor, white poor.
White poor, yes.
Yeah. So in 1865, in May, he issued a proclamation of amnesty, granting forgiveness to nearly all of the millions of former Confederate rebels. A few leaders were excluded from this amnesty, but they were given the opportunity to secure pardon by special petition. So then after this, the White House halls are flooded.
So there's just like no consequences.
Yeah, none. Yeah.
What? Okay.
So the White House halls are flooded by...
That explains so much.
I know.
It explains everything, actually.
All these ex-Confederate statesmen and former Southern generals are like in the White House asking for presidential forgiveness. And he's like, yeah, it's fine. Go ahead. You're good.
Yeah, here's a statue in your honor.
Yeah, exactly. So while he wanted to and was like very vocal about like telling the South what he expected them to do for Reconstruction, he wanted them to focus on improving conditions for the white Southern poor and taking away power from these plantation owners.
Yes.
The South was like, dude, you're a pushover. You're not like, fuck you. You know what I mean? We're going to just do what we want because you're not telling us we can't.
Yeah.
He's pushing to like let them back in and like they can do whatever they want. It's not up to the government to tell you what to do.
Yeah.
It's basically, you know, he was all about states' rights kind of, you know.
Yes, hashtag states' rights.
So then the South was emboldened. They started choosing all these high-ranking ex-Confederate officers to represent them in Congress.
Yeah.
Instead of focusing on expanding the rights of poor white Americans, they decided to focus their energy on limiting the rights of Southern black Americans.
We can't have them exercising their vote, their rights as Americans. Yeah,
absolutely not. They don't have rights and they shouldn't have rights.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then there was the series of black codes. It was different state by state. It was a weird time because these states were like not officially states. They weren't back in the Union. It was like he was pushing to let them back in, but then Congress was sort of resisting. Mm. But the southern states were sort of trying to figure out how to operate in this void of like a clearly delineated power structure.
Yeah, like supervision, basically.
So they start passing these black codes, and every state had their own. South Carolina, for example, enacted a law that no Negro could pursue the trade of, quote, an artisan, mechanic, or shopkeeper, or any other trade or employment besides that of husbandry, without a specially issued government license. Mm-hmm. Alabama said that any, quote, stubborn or refractory servants or servants who loiter away their time should be fined $50. And if they couldn't pay $50, they should be hired, quote, hired out for forced labor for 6 months.
Okay. Yes.
Mississippi had a law that if any Negro under 18 was an orphan or was not supported by their parents, they must be an apprentice to some white person.
Yes.
Preferably their former owner.
Oh, of course. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. So basically they're just like trying slavery to like again. Recreate slavery.
Yeah.
With like different wording. So it's like, it's not slavery. But sort it is. Of. Yeah. Yeah.
All the same feelings of slavery, but different words.
Yeah, exactly. But so this was all sort of going on like in little bits and pieces in different states, but in general, not much had happened yet. Johnson was still really early in his presidency, in his term, and nobody really knew what was going on yet, even though...
So what year is this?
This would have been like 1865, 1866.
And when was the end of the revolution?
1865. The war was over in 1865. Okay. Yeah. So Lincoln was shot in 64.
Okay.
Just before the end of the war. It was just like before. Almost over.
Yeah.
But so the moderates in Congress thought they might be able to reason with him. They might be able to compromise with him. So they, even though they were sort of looking at Reconstruction from a very different place than Johnson, they thought, like, he's a reasonable man. We can work with him.
Yes.
He was not a reasonable man.
No.
So they basically, they would go to his office and they would walk in and say, like, I want to talk to you about blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
He would be like, okay. And he would sit behind his desk and he would let them make their case.
Mm-hmm.
He would sit there. He would nod. He wouldn't really say much about, like, he wouldn't say what he was thinking. He wouldn't give his opinions. He would just sit there and nod and let them make their case and make them feel like they had really made their point.
Yeah, like been heard.
They would leave the office and then the next day he would do the exact opposite thing of what they... Yeah.
That's hilarious.
His support eroded really quickly.
Of course.
He basically made it his mission to block any Republican action against the South basically protecting the southern states that weren't states yet from any action against Republicans.
Yeah.
He vetoed the Freedmen's Bureau Bill in February of 1866, which was basically the straw that broke the camel's back for Republicans, galvanized the moderate Republicans to join forces with the radical Republicans in their, you know, their quest for guaranteeing civil rights for freedmen.
Mm-hmm.
After the moderates and the Republican, or the moderates and the radicals sort of joined forces, because it was only northern states in Congress, they basically had like a unanimous vote. So every single bill that they were putting forth for Reconstruction was passed instantly.
Yeah.
And Johnson was fighting it or was trying to fight it, but they had such a majority that they could vote, they could pass bills over his veto.
Oh.
It's like, I think he can veto it and they can go back and be like, well, enough of us disagree
okay.
with you like the bill still passes even over your veto. They had that big of a majority. So Johnson is like running around trying to rush to like bring these Confederate dominated states back into the Union. And the Republicans were like, okay, if this is going to happen, if he's going to let these Southern dominated states and Democrat dominated states back into the Union, we have to pass a bunch of laws really fast before this happens. Basically thinking they had to sort of legislate morality before the Southern states were back in the Union and could fight it.
Okay.
So their plan was like, if the Southern states are coming back, we have to pass all these laws before. So that when they are joining the Union, they're joining a Union that already has these laws.
Established laws.
Yeah. So they thought that black suffrage was their only real counterpoint to these Democratic dominated states. And so they pass in 1867, they pass a series of Reconstruction Acts. They were attempting to legislate equality for freedmen. But not only that, they also divided the South into five military districts. Because like I said before, it was sort of, there was this like power vacuum where nobody really knew who was in charge. They weren't states yet, but they were on their way, you know.
I shudder to think all the things that happened in that vacuum.
So they divide the South up into these five military districts that are run by the Union military. And they also tell them that to be able to be accepted back into the Union, that they have to draft acceptable state constitutions that have to get congressional approval before they can come back. Johnson tried to fight all these acts, but he was powerless. So then on Washington's birthday on February 22nd, 1866. Yeah. Well, I think, when did this come? Oh, the Andrew Jackson big cheese thing.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Ew. Just kidding.
Gross. Yeah. So 1866, on Washington's birthday, all of these Johnson supporters show up at the White House, outside the White House. And he's like, okay, it's Washington's birthday. I'm going to give
a
speech.
They're wearing their hats.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to give a speech. And everyone's like, okay, dude's going to give a speech about Washington or, you know, the history of America and how great America is.
Oh.
He talks about himself. He mentions his own name 200 times in an hour-long speech.
How is that possible?
Yeah, I know.
200 times?
200 times he mentions himself. Maybe not by name, but he mentions himself 200 times in an hour-long speech. He says, I fought traitors and treason in the South. Now when I turn around and at the other end of the line find men, I care not by what name you call them, who will stand opposed to the restoration of the Union of these states, I am free to say to you that I am still in the field. Meaning the field of war.
Oh.
Yeah. So he's fighting a war against the Republicans, is essentially what he's telling his supporters. And then he goes on to call out a few of his strongest opponents amongst the radical Republicans.
Mitt Romney.
Yeah. No, these are the... Well, so this is before the switch. So basically, like, these would be today's Democrats.
Yes.
So it would be like he would be calling out AOC. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he calls them out by name and by the states that they represent in this speech. And then he goes on to tell his supporters that these radical Republicans are trying to destroy the nation's institutions.
Wow.
So then, you know, at this point, like I said, southern states were not fully states in the grand scheme of so they couldn't vote in Congress, even though they had sort of a little bit of representation because they're trying to, like, get things done. Huh. They couldn't vote in Congress.
Wow.
And Johnson knew he needed to find a way to get support to fight the power of the Republicans.
Okay.
So the midterm elections are coming up, and he's like, okay, I'm going to go on this, like, whirlwind tour of the North and try and drum up support for Northern Democrats. Because if I have Democrats in Congress, then they'll back me up against these Republicans.
Yeah.
So he goes on this big tour of Chicago. He goes to Chicago, St. Louis, Indianapolis, Columbus.
Of course.
It's a fucking shit show. It's a disaster.
Really? It is,
he makes comparisons in speeches between himself and Jesus.
Oh, no.
Yeah. He actually openly argues with hecklers in the crowd.
Is he at an open mic?
Like, seriously. Yeah.
What?
He goes on to say that, well, I'll say suggest, that his political rivals should be hanged. He then goes on to say that he's going to go through his cabinet and find anyone who disagrees with him in his cabinet and get rid of them.
So thin-skinned.
I know. I mean, imagine a president who,
heard of such a president.
Yeah.
Eyes dart back and forth.
Ooh, I'm going to take a drink on that. I don't know who you might be referring to.
I'm drunk. I don't know what I'm saying.
So obviously, it's disastrous.
Yeah, it sounds like a mess.
It's a publicity tour, but it ends up being a fucking dumpster fire.
Yikes.
His speeches are called, quote, beneath the dignity of the presidency.
Oh, wow. There was such a thing as beneath the dignity.
When the presidency had dignity. I don't even remember those days.
I've read about those days. Well, I do remember those days, but those days are long gone.
Yeah. The midterms, in the end, the Republicans win by a huge landslide.
Because, duh.
Yeah. Thereby increasing their majority in Congress, thanks to him.
Yeah.
And his fucking idiot, thin-skinned bullshit. The one thing that came out of this was that after he was going around in speeches saying that he was going to go through his cabinet and get rid of people, the Republicans saw the writing on the wall and they saw a target on the back of one key cabinet member, Edwin Stanton from
Ohio.
Ohio. Ding, 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 ding.
I'm afraid.
Edwin Stanton was a Lincoln appointee who was in Johnson's cabinet because he didn't go through and, like, replace cabinet members when he became president.
Okay.
I heard a podcast. I don't know. I didn't actually look and confirm this because I'm lazy. I heard that he was a lifelong Democrat, which is surprising because he was fiercely anti-slavery.
Weird.
Yeah.
Weird.
Because he was from the North, I guess, from Ohio.
Oh.
But he was... He's an interesting guy. I found quite a few podcasts just about Edwin Stanton, the man.
That's insane.
Yeah. He was...
So he must have been super complex.
It sounds like he was an enigma wrapped in a conundrum. A riddle? Yeah.
Yes.
He was super progressive, was sort of steering Lincoln to be even further progressive, really had taken a really strong hand during the Civil War and was basically instrumental in making the war play out the way it did. And depending on the podcast you listen to or the source, some people say that he kind of fucked the war up and made the war last longer. And then other people are like, no, he won the war. Everybody has an opinion.
How could he make the war?
He was the Secretary of War.
Oh,
I did not say that.
Okay,
yes.
I'm like, how did I miss that?
Sorry,
I'm like,
I did not say that.
This dude from Steubenville has, like, made the war longer, but how?
He was Lincoln's Secretary of War.
There we go.
Yes,
there we go.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I left out that key piece of information.
What?
Yeah. So he's Lincoln's Secretary of War, but then after...
So wait, I'm sorry to interrupt. It was called a Secretary of War?
Yes.
Instead of the defense?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So aggressive. I love it.
I know, yeah.
I mean, I don't love it. I love it ironically. Because it's telling it, it's using its real name.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like when people use the real names for things.
Let's call it what it is. Yeah.
Thank
exactly.
you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So basically, once Johnson took over and the war was over, he was power hungry. And he, I read up.
Wait, the Secretary of War was power hungry?
Yeah, I know. Shocker of the day. You should have like a buzzer. Like a, yeah. He was openly disagreeing with Johnson.
Oh.
Things were really tenuous between the two of them, but he didn't want to step down, even though they were disagreeing all the time, because he was afraid that Johnson would then just handpick a replacement who would be more politically aligned with Johnson's, initiative or whatever. So after the Reconstruction Acts were passed and expanded military control over the South, the Republicans are like, Stanton is important. We cannot let this happen. We can't let Johnson just swoop in and get rid of him. So in March of 1867, Congress passes the controversial Tenure of Office Act, which was specifically designed to limit the president's ability to dismiss important government officials as he saw fit. So up at the way things go, when a new president comes in and they want to appoint their cabinet, Senate has to approve cabinet appointments before they're sworn in. That's just how it goes. The Tenure of Office Act said that cabinet dismissals also had to get Senate approval before they could be let go. So they're like, you can't let Stanton go without us signing off on it.
To keep him around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot to also mention that the Reconstruction Acts, having military control over the South, was Stanton's idea.
I mean, and you have to.
Yeah. The Republicans are like, yes, please.
Yeah.
Yeah. At this point, the Tenure of Office Act passes, and Stanton is feeling very bold. He's like, I have protection, Congress and Senate, they're not going to let me go.
Yeah.
So I can just do whatever I want now. So he is like openly working to undermine the president's control over the South. Openly basically just doing what he thought that should be happening in the South and not listening to Johnson at all.
Yeah.
Johnson is not having it. In August of 1867. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. August of 1867, while Congress is in recess, the president demanded Stanton's resignation.
I'm not going anywhere, bitch.
Yeah, so Stanton
signing.
Stanton said just that.
Get out of here.
I'm not going to quit, especially not while Congress is in recess.
Get out of my
Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Bye.
So Johnson was like, okay, you are dismissed.
Oh.
You are dismissed, and I am replacing you with General Ulysses S. Grant as Secretary of War ad interim. Senate comes back in the fall, and they're like, no, no, no.
Yeah, we're not doing this.
You're not allowed to do this. Yeah. There is a law against this at this point.
Yeah.
So Stanton is reinstated.
Amazing.
In the fall. Grant resigns because he's like, this is a political hot potato. I want to run for president eventually. I'm not going to let this fuck up my shit.
Yeah.
He's
not pulling me.
See you later, Johnson.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm stepping away
Thank
from
you,
this.
Thank you, but also I want a career.
Yeah.
So pass.
Yeah, exactly. And then Johnson is not only pissed at the Republicans, then he's also pissed at Grant for walking away.
Yeah.
So then February of the following year, Johnson goes back in and was like, you know what? Fuck this noise. You are fired. I'm not just like saying that you have to go away. You're fired. So he replaces Stanton with Major General Lorenzo Thomas, who was a longstanding foe of Stanton's.
Oh, okay.
He puts Thomas in as interim
Lorenzo.
Secretary. Yes, I know.
What an interesting name.
I know. I don't know where he would have been from at that point.
Spain, probably. Yeah.
At this point, we've already seen how this goes.
Yeah.
He already tried the shit. It didn't work. So Stanton then has Lorenzo Thomas arrested for trying to seize his office.
Hilarious.
And then, with Republican support, Stanton locks himself in his office and refuses to leave.
What all does he have in his office?
I was listening to another podcast, and they basically said that he sent messages to his wife, like, send me blankets and cots and shit. And his wife was like, you are ridiculous.
I mean,
if you want this shit, you come get it your fucking self.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah.
I love
and
her.
So he was there for a few days before he kind of was like, okay, nobody's tried to like pull me out. So I'm going to sneak away in the night, go home, get blankets, and then come back. And he was in his office hold up for weeks.
Shit!
Yeah.
Damn! So he was able to sneak out and get his stuff?
Yeah, and then it was like he kind of felt the waters and like tested the waters to see if anyone was coming for him.
It's like they want him bad, but they apparently don't want him bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So then on February 24th, 1868, the House of Representatives votes 126-47 to impeach the president for high crimes and misdemeanors, which were detailed in 11 articles of impeachment.
Okay.
The main 3 points that they were trying to make in the first 3 articles were violation of the Tenure of Office Act.
Yes.
Challenging Congress's authority.
Correct.
And bringing Congress into, quote, disgrace, ridicule, hatred, contempt, and reproach.
Oh, I like the reproach.
Yeah. Imagine that.
Huh.
The impeachment is a shit show.
Of course, as they all are.
Yeah. It is a shit show. The impeachment trial starts in March and lasts almost 3 months. It's conducted in open session in front of a packed gallery in the Senate. So many people were showing up at every day that they had to institute a ticketing system. 1,000 tickets were printed every day for one. Each ticket was good for one day.
Whoa.
40 tickets went to the diplomatic corps. 20 tickets went to the president, 4 to each senator, 4 to the chief justice, 2 to each of the representatives, and then any tickets left over were distributed to the public.
Okay.
And they were, like I said, one each were good for one day. Basically, people thought, you know, Johnson clearly violated the Tenure of Office Act, so they thought that his removal from office was inevitable.
They thought.
Thought.
There we go.
So the New York Times publishes an article that says, as to the results of the trial, the president is already convicted in the minds of most people.
Hmm.
However.
There's always a however.
Yeah. So the defense comes up with this really kind of complicated argument that, like, the wording of the Tenure of Office Act was murky and easily misunderstood.
What?
And which it was.
Oh, was it?
Was it really, though? It's so ridiculous. They designed this law specifically to protect Stanton, and the wording of the law did not protect Stanton. They basically said that something like presidential appointees couldn't be dismissed without Senate approval, but like saying that appointees that president had appointed. And Stanton was not appointed by Johnson. He was appointed by Lincoln.
Oh, okay.
Which is ridiculous. Why would you do that if the entire point was to protect one man?
Damn, that's a massive fail.
Yeah.
Who wrote this?
Congress was very bold at this point because they had this huge supermajority and they were like, we can do whatever we want. Nobody's trying to fight us except Johnson. So try and stop us. It's so dumb. But so the defense says that the wording is murky and easily misunderstood and that the president cannot be impeached for a mistaken interpretation of the law. But then, in the same breath, they say that the president knew what the law was and was intentionally defying it because he thought that it was unconstitutional and wanted to take the argument to the Supreme Court, which was his right. But those are two very different arguments and basically negate each other.
They do.
You can't say that you don't understand the law and then say that you understand the law.
But I want the Supreme Court to hear my argument.
Yeah.
Okay, no.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, the Tenure of Office Act really was bullshit. So, May 16th, 1868, there's this big dramatic call of the roll in Senate. 35 senators voted to convict the president on the first article of impeachment, and 19 senators vote to acquit. You need a two-thirds majority to actually remove a president from office. So they missed it by one vote. One vote.
Damn.
10 days later, the Congress votes on the second and third articles of impeachment, and they come to the exact same conclusion. They missed it by one vote. So there were 11 articles of impeachment, but they decided to only try him on the first three because they thought, the Congress thought, these are the three that are going to be easiest to get a conviction. They failed on all three, so they're kind of like, okay, I guess we fucked up. And then they accept a defeat and the proceedings are over. That's it.
Oh, that's it?
He was acquitted on all three counts. The only three counts that they brought him to trial on.
I wonder who they thought was going to be like vote number 30.
Well, so they had this big majority. I mean, it's really the radical Republicans, the super progressive Republicans, that are the ones that are like leading this whole thing. But because all these other Republicans are pissed at Johnson, the moderates were pissed at Johnson for all the backstabbing and shit and the passive aggressive shit where they'd like, he'd be like,
oh yes, you listening, know what I mean? And it's like, actually, I'm going to do the opposite of what you said.
Exactly. So then the moderates are like, fuck you. So the radicals were like, obviously all the moderates are going to vote on our side and there's only a few people that aren't Republicans.
Okay, so the moderates are like Susan Collins.
Yeah, exactly.
She's the worst. I hate her.
Let's look at, so there were 19 votes to acquit.
Okay.
Seven of them were Republicans. So there are seven moderate Republicans who defied the Republican Party.
Huh.
They come out and publicly say they had done it to protect the Constitution because they believed that this law that they passed was unconstitutional. Senator James Grimes of Iowa said, I cannot agree to destroy the harmonious workings of the Constitution for the sake of getting rid of an unacceptable president.
Sure. But sure. Whatever.
Yeah. You voted for this law that you are now agreeing with its questionable constitutionality. The real reasons, some historians might not agree with this, but it looks like the real reasons he was acquitted are different. The moderates were looking at who was about to take over for Johnson. If he was pushed out of office, who's next in line? Johnson didn't have a VP because he was the VP. So then they're looking at the president pro tempore, who was Ohio Senator Ben Wade, who's this super radical progressive Republican.
Amazing.
Wade supported such progressive measures as women's suffrage.
Moderates
were like, oh, hell no.
Yeah, nope.
And so basically, many historians agree that the reason that they
that's fucked up.
They didn't want to get Johnson out of office because they didn't want women to get the vote.
Wow, and I believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also some talk about bribery being involved in the in the outcome.
Probably.
There wasn't a subsequent bribery investigation. And while it turned up a lot of like, it's likely that there was bribery, there was no proof.
Okay.
Or there was not enough proof to actually do anything.
The fear of women
about
voting is enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's more than enough.
So, trial's over. The Republicans kind of like, shit. Well, okay. Edwin Stanton steps down. He goes back to practicing law, which is what he was doing like before. Johnson ends up appointing General John M. Schofield, who was actually really well-liked not only by Democrats, but also by the moderate Republicans. So it may have been kind of like a an olive branch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to, you know, sorry you guys lost, but like, here's you protected me. So this is what I'm going to do for you. But then Johnson is up for, or is, you know, his term is about to be over. He's an incumbent, so he gets to run for a second term. He loses the Democratic nomination.
Whoa.
Yeah. The Democrats are like, no, you're a fucking loose cannon.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
You're a liability.
Yeah, exactly.
We want to win.
Exactly.
Peace.
Yeah.
Thank you for your service.
Exactly.
Get the fuck out of here.
Seriously. He was a mess.
Yeah.
So then after he loses the Democratic nomination, he goes right back to being this like hostile dickbag.
His true self.
Yeah. So then he issues blanket amnesty for all former Confederates, including ex-Confederate President Jefferson Davis.
I'm not shocked. Yeah.
Blanket amnesty.
I mean,
then he goes on to veto every single Republican Reconstruction bill, every single one. Of course, he is powerless, so it don't matter.
Yeah.
He's just, why bother?
He just wants to let them know that he's pissed.
Yeah. But like, no one cares about you, dude.
Yeah.
You're not getting reelected.
Yeah.
You don't even have the chance to get reelected.
I think he just wants to be able to go around his friends in the South. Like, I tried.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's right. He's basically, so he tries to veto all these bills. He's a lame duck. He can't get any shit done. He's basically a placeholder until in 1869, he is replaced by Ulysses S. Grant, who played his cards correctly, clearly.
Yeah.
And then in Grant's first message to Congress, he's like, y'all need to repeal the Tenure of Office Act. this shit is ridiculous. Get rid of it. So what do you think Congress did?
They got rid of it?
Nope. The whole point of the Tenure of Office Act was to protect Edwin
Stanton. One person, yeah.
It was not meant to be used in the future at all. So then they do not agree to repeal it, but they do agree to amend it.
Oh.
Which makes zero sense because it already was murky. They basically turn it into word salad. It has zero meaning. Zero meaning after they amend it. Hmm. It literally is just a collection of words on a page. What? It's so fucking dumb. It's so dumb. I can't even describe how dumb. Huh. 5 years later, Johnson runs for Senate in Tennessee, and he wins. At this point, Tennessee is a state again.
Okay.
He's no longer president, but his policy of like, I'm going to veto everything so at least people in the South like me.
Yeah.
It worked.
I mean.
He wins his Senate race in Tennessee, finally goes back to Washington after 5 years.
How embarrassing.
Yeah, I know. Like, tail between his legs.
You're a senator now? How sad for you.
He serves 3 months and then he dies. He's in the Senate for 3 months, dies on July 31st, 1875.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm guessing he died of shame.
I mean, I would assume. would assume. Because it's like you again? Like, yeah, and now you're a senator? Seriously. Like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
How sad for you.
So, former President Why Andrew Johnson.
Why would you even do this?
Yes.
It's shameful.
He dies of shame on on July 31st, 1875. Then, fast forward again, 1887, the Tenure of Office Act is finally repealed.
Okay.
Because the Senate tried to use the Tenure of Office Act again against Grover Cleveland.
Ha! Groper.
Groper. Good old Groper.
Groper strikes again.
Yeah. So apparently the way it was reworded, it just doesn't make any sense. But basically the way it was reworded, it said that presidents were free to replace cabinet members at their will.
Okay.
But they had to say why.
Sure.
But there was also what was called, I think it was called the spoils system. Basically, it's the president's right to replace cabinet members when they take office. They don't have to keep the previous president's cabinet members.
No, not at all.
It is their right to replace them.
Yeah.
So Cleveland gets into office. And apparently he kind of said that he wasn't going to just go out and replace everybody. And if he wanted to replace people, he would have like a real reason for doing it. But then he gets in office and he just lies. Replaces everyone.
Yeah.
And Senate was like, but why? The Tenure of Office Act said that he had to tell them why. His right was to go in and be like, because I said so, because I'm the president. And that would have been enough of a reason. Because that was his right.
Yeah.
Instead of just saying, because I said so, he's like, fuck y'all, I don't need to tell you shit. And then Senate's like, girl, that's the only thing you had to do?
Yeah.
So they tried to use it against him. Yeah, exactly. Which ultimately, because he didn't really have to do much of anything, Senate was like, you're breaking the law. But then like, what the fuck does the law actually say? So then they were like, okay, let's get rid of this garbage. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Fast forward again. In 1926, a similar law goes to the Supreme Court. It was not the Tenure of Office Act, but it was basically similar. The Supreme Court sees this case that's for another law, but they look at it and they're like, okay, here's the thing. There was this law called the Tenure of Office Act, and it's been repealed because it was bullshit.
Yes.
And this, whatever, I don't know what the other law was that they were actually trying, but they're like, your law is real similar, and this other law was bullshit, and you know what? Not only is your law bullshit, but we're going to go ahead and say in 1926 that the fucking Tenure of Office Act from the last century was bullshit and should never have been in place in the first place because it was unconstitutional from the fucking get-go. Looking back at the whole thing, like, obviously, Andrew Johnson was a piece of shit. Obviously. Obviously, the Republicans were kind of on the right side of history, but they made a mess of shit.
Yeah. They made a law to protect one man.
Yeah. Literally, to protect an entire Congress. So, literally, Congress passed an entire law to protect one man.
Yes.
They wanted to get their own way. Historians, looking back, have all basically agreed the charges against Johnson were flimsy at best, if not outright false, and should never have come up. He should never have come up for impeachment in the first place. However, the Republicans had the supermajority. They were feeling real bold. They were feeling themselves.
I was about to say, they were feeling themselves.
And they really were on the right side of history, but like, girl.
Yeah.
You can't come up with something better? But as it turns out, the Tenure of Office Act was not the first time that they had tried to bring him up for impeachment.
Oh.
It was the third time that they had tried to. It was only the first time that it actually passed a vote in Congress. Because it was the first time that he had actually broken the law, like, outright.
Finally.
This law is here.
Yeah.
This law exists.
Yeah.
Sounds at the end of the day, it didn't fucking work.
Yeah.
The weirdest part of the whole thing is that I went into this story thinking that it was something completely different. Tim was actually the one that kind of suggested that I tell the story because, like, we live in 2019. We have impeachment on the mind right now for some reason that, you know, we won't say just yet. And Tim was like, whenever you bring up impeachment, everybody goes to Clinton. Immediately goes to Clinton.
Yeah.
Nobody ever talks about Andrew Johnson. So Tim was like, let's talk about...
I think about Johnson a lot.
Yeah.
Just because I know he was the first.
Yeah. But most people don't know who he was or why this was happening.
I don't know who he was or why.
Which is exactly...
Yeah.
So Tim suggests that I do this, and we were at a bar. We were talking about something else, and he was like, we should look into this. And Tim looks it up, and he's like, okay, so he was impeached because he broke this one law.
Yeah.
And then we look at the law, and we're like, okay, so he was impeached because Congress passed a law about one person. Before I knew who Johnson was, I'm looking at this like, okay, so Congress was being ridiculous.
Yeah, they fucked up.
And this is idiocy.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, I know what my story is. Congress passes this law to protect this one man against this other man, and then, like,
yeah,
all fucking hell breaks loose. But then once I actually start researching it, I'm like, oh.
Oh, I see why they did it.
Okay.
Yeah. I get it.
Yeah, exactly. I know why they did what they did, but, like, it was
still not right.
A mess. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
The really disappointing part of it, though, is, like, if you think about Johnson, forget about the impeachment. If you think about Johnson and Lincoln, Johnson squandered an opportunity to reshape the history of our fucking country.
He didn't give a shit.
No, he didn't give a shit. But, like, what world could we be living in right now if Lincoln hadn't been assassinated?
Oh, a completely different one.
Completely different. Radically. Or even if Lincoln had been assassinated, but Hannibal Hamlin was the VP, or another Republican was the VP. No, Ben Wade from Ohio.
Reconstruction, fuckery.
We would be living in a totally different world.
Yeah.
It would have changed not only the history of our nation, it would have changed world history. We would be completely, like, we might not even be here, honestly, because, like, who knows what could have happened. This is, you know, if Lincoln hadn't appointed, or if Lincoln had, excuse me, now I'm drunk.
Same, and I'm very thankful that I don't have to talk,
because
I'm just like, uh-huh.
If Lincoln had appointed another Republican, we would live in a different world.
Yes,
but definitely. Instead, he appointed this piece of shit Southern Democrat.
Compromise. I'm going to be the better person in compromise. Don't be the better person.
It wasn't even really about the better person. He kind of was in this position where he felt like he couldn't win because radicals were saying that he was being too soft on the South.
Okay.
And then the Democrats were saying you're being too hard on the South.
Mm.
And the moderates were kind of like, like, I can't take a stand on anything. And that's it. That's the story.
Wow, that is a story.
It's insane, right?
Insane, like, yeah. I'm glad that I know more about Johnson.
Yeah.
Like, I had no clue.
Yeah.
Like, all I knew is that he was the first person to be impeached.
Yeah.
And I know that he wrote out his term, but, like, that's all I know.
You knew more than I did. Honestly, I didn't even know the name of the person that was first impeached, because Tim suggested. I was like, who?
Yeah.
I knew that somebody had been impeached before Lincoln.
I always think it's Clinton. Jackson, but I'm like, no, other asshole.
Other asshole other named with Andrew. A J. Andrew J.
Yeah, because in my head it's Andrew J. And I'm like, no, not Jackson, the other one.
Yeah.
Johnson.
The other racist piece of shit.
Exactly.
Named AJ.
Think about AJs all the... are trash, you guys.
Yeah. If your name is AJ, no.
Or just, you know, look into yourself and do better. Maybe go into therapy.
Tim, you should cut all that right out.
Don't cut any of it. AJs need to go to therapy, as we all do.
Or prison. Okay. At the end of the day, it's just a crazy, like, crazy to think about the similarities. Because obviously...
Yes.
Clinton's impeachment was a very different circumstance.
Oh, yeah, completely.
And I lived through Clinton's impeachment. Yeah. I was kind of paying attention to the news, and I know bits and pieces, but I never really... I didn't want to fully pay attention because it was ridiculous, and it just seemed so silly. But the correlations between Johnson's presidency and a certain other racist piece of shit who's trying to undo the...
Yeah, they're very similar.
Yeah.
These two. I think this is what happens when you don't know your history.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It repeats itself.
There may be some justice in 2020.
Yeah.
2020.
True. The next decade. We're going to be in the roaring 20s, you guys. Oh, are you prepared?
Let's hope they're roaring.
I think they will be.
We'll see.
I'm drinking to the 20s. It's time.
It's time.
It's that time. Drinks are empty.
Should we cheers?
Yes.
There's a little bit of cocktail left on the bottom there, but...
Yes.
I love that noise.
So American history is juicy. We just add rum and lime and
a little bit of sugar
and
oh man, sweet, so sweet good. Lime juice.
So thank you so much for listening to Beyond Reproach. This has been Stephanie Domingo.
And Bob Kramer.
Yes. Thank you, Bob.
My name's Doug Slurzel.
Thank you to Tim Clough, our editor, sound engineer, and our podfather. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please share with two people.
Two people.
Yes.
You know two people.
You know two people.
You do. Why have you not told them about Beyond Reproach yet?
People know how to share things. You can share podcasts.
You can share in person.
Yeah, that too.
Be like, bitch.
But also, if you're listening to it, you can just hit share and text it to someone.
100%.
That's what I do to my sisters. I do it all the time. And my friends, Tux, he gets so many of my texts. I'm like, listen to this.
I listen to about a half of what you send me.
I send it to him. It's an assault, the things that I do.
The best kind of assault.
Yeah. It's bad. I'm like, okay, Stephanie, like give it 72 hours and then send it three more.
You have my consent, which is an important factor when it comes to assault.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for that. I need it in writing. I need my lawyers to sign it.
I have you. It is on recording, and
that's
it is about
true.
To be released to
wonderful.
The world.
Wonderful. Please follow us on social media: Beyond Reproach Pod on Facebook, Insta, Twitter. We have a shop. Check it out.
Where BeyondReproachPod.com.
Yes. Follow us on Instagram because we release cocktails every Thursday before we release the full episode. So check out our hashtag Thirsty Thursday.
Yeah, drink along with us, guys.
Yeah.
I don't know your life. Don't drink along with us if you're driving while listening to our
podcast.
But like,
obviously not.
Make an event out of it. Sit down. Sit down on Monday night and have a daiquiri.
Enjoy yourself. You've earned it. We're also on Patreon. If anyone would love to show us a bit of love, support the production of our show, doing the right thing.
Help us pay Tim.
Yes. Yes.
Help us buy some rum and limes.
Seriously.
I juiced 16 limes today.
He did. It looked ridiculous.
With
like,
a little.
Is that all lime juice?
Wooden reamer, not even a squeezer thing. I have a reamer.
You were living in the past, but thank you.
I actually think you have more control with the reamer than the squeezer.
Of course you would. Yes.
As long as you don't have any cuts on your hands, you don't have to worry about getting citrus juice on your hands.
Okay. Well, signing off.
This is what happens when you drink four daiquiris.
Yes, we talk about citrus juice in blood being on your hands.
So. Ooh, all right, on that note.
Yes.
Goodbye.
Bye, Drew.